This is an Equity Bates Media podcast.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ever listen to this? Ever listen to this?
Now, that kind of talk this week dragged Australia's share market to
this
a two-year low.
There are, of course, complex Stephen reasons for that.
He was the big spender. Right. The big spender.
Doing the grocery shopping could take a huge chunk out of the family budget.
And that's finance.
Hello and welcome to Comedian versus Economist. We demystify the world of money and help you get a handle on the bigger picture. My name's Adam. Yes, I'm back. And we're joined as always by my little older brother and real life economist, Thomas. Hi, Thomas.
Yeah, g'day, Adam. Welcome back.
Ah, thank you. It's a delight to be back. How'd you go while I was away? I heard you had another economist in. That must have been amazing.
Yeah, I think it was a good app, actually.
You were happy with it?
Oh, I was. It was fascinating.
That's the most important thing.
Yeah, thanks. Mm. No, we had fun.
I did actually check the listen-through stats, which is shows how much each listener, how much of the episode they listened through to. And through the roof, Thomas, people were listening right up until the end, which I can only assume was because they fell asleep. No, it must have been good. Well, thank you. Thank you for holding the fort while I was away.
And thanks, Tim. Thanks for the insights there. Go check it out.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, this is our birthday episode. We've officially turned one as a podcast. We are 1 year old. Hmm. All right, big ep coming up. Got an email actually from Richard before we get started. Email from Richard, who's on the New South Wales Central Coast, Thomas, which is up your way.
Yeah, yeah.
He sent us an email, cve@equitymates.com or via the website equitymates.com/CVE. Sent us an email a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about Rivian, the Rivian electric vehicles. And he pointed out something kind of interesting, a bit of a fun fact about Rivian. He noted that some Rivians come with a built-in camp stove.
Camp stove.
Which just strikes me as a little odd. Like, take that Tesla, you might have wireless connectivity, but Rivian's got a camp stove. And wireless. Wireless radio, that is. AM and FM, would you believe, for when you're really off the beaten track. Thank you, Richard, for sending us that little tidbit. That was quite fascinating. All right, big show coming up. Lot to get through. Thomas, we're going to look at what's being dubbed the Great Resignation, or as I call it, people still hate their jobs and a pandemic didn't really change anything. We'll also play a game of guess how many companies in the ASX 300 have made any money ever. It's higher than you might think. And a couple of well-known economists have been debating in the media why houses are not like mandarins. And I can only assume there's a gag in there somewhere that's already making economists chortle. For the rest of us, stay tuned to find out what's going on. But first, shout out to everyone listening in New Zealand. Michael sent us a message, said that we're actually part of his daily commute, which is showing real commitment given that we're a weekly show. New Zealand, of course, famous for its hiking, Thomas. Hiking rates, that is.
Oh.
Thomas, what's going on?
Yeah. Oh, that's gold. Put that on the highlight reel. Yeah. Now, the Reserve Bank of New Zealand became the first central bank in the world to hike rates for a second time from the lows of the post-COVID era. Yeah. So, leading the central banking community out of record low interest rates. Hiked rates then now up to 0.75%. So still, you know, pretty low in the scheme of things.
Mm.
But yeah, on the way up, and the sort of the outlook is they're going to hike pretty steadily from here on. Market's pricing in another 6 rate cuts. RBNZ's talking about another 7, but markets aren't believing them.
Why doesn't anyone believe the central banks? Like, that happens with the RBA in Australia.
Mm.
Why do people just not believe what they're saying?
There, So one of the things that the central banks have their eye on is inflation expectations. So if people don't expect inflation to happen, they don't put it into their pricing. Firms don't raise their prices. Workers don't ask for more wages to anticipate inflation, and then you don't get inflation. It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. So inflation expectations determine inflation, but inflation expectations are determined by people looking at the central banks and their forecasts and thinking about what's going to happen. So it's a bit circular like that. So the central banks often talk up a big game and say the economy's doing great, because then if everyone believes them, so if you're under the target, under your inflation target, and then you're saying you want the inflation to be above 2%, but you're under 2%, then just by saying, hey, we think the economy's doing pretty good, we think inflation's going to be around 2.5%, if everyone believes you, then those inflation expectations get built into pricing and you end up with inflation of 2.5%. So
right.
Central banks tend to talk to their what they want inflation to be, and then markets are looking at what they think it actually is. And there can be times where those two things are different.
Is this a bit like Pat Cummins has been named captain of Australian Test team, but everyone knows that Steve Smith's really the one calling the shots?
Yeah, I'm going to say yes.
All right, I just want to get my head around it. That's okay, good.
Yeah, it's a bit funny. I mean, they're not far off. It's not a big difference, but yeah. It's a bit different. And it's also like forecasting is difficult. The market economists might just have a different outlook on where the economy is going to the central bank economists. So those
forecasting is difficult card again, eh? Just keep that safely tucked in your back pocket and rip it out whenever anything you say doesn't pan out.
Yeah.
Right, okay. So rates have gone up. They're going up. Why is New Zealand so different to Australia? Like, I would have thought we're pretty similar environments, aren't we?
It is interesting that we're getting such different outcomes. And it is a big difference. So in annual inflation's at 4.9% and heading north of that. So that's already well above their target range. Mm. Unemployment's down to 3.4%, the lowest level since December 2007. So it's just running hot. And house prices are growing at 30%. Which is Adrian Orr, wow. The central bank governor, came out and just said, that's batshit crazy, bro. Like, 30% is just off the hook. Like, you know, you almost never see price growth that. But that's coast to coast in New Zealand. Like, every town and city is growing at this kind of crazy rate. So it does seem like the economy is overheating. And I think because New Zealand had the same pandemic response, super low interest rates and money printing, but they got off pretty light. You know, they were able to lock down early and they weren't as impacted by COVID as Australia has been.
Mm, Jacinda nailed it again.
Nailed it, yeah.
She just crushes it over there. Right, okay.
Yeah. So New Zealand's got to, the RBNZ's got to, respond to those kind of numbers. Like that. That's not temporary. You know, inflation at 4.9% already and heading higher. That's gone beyond transitory.
And so they were the first ones to bring in some of the measures to try and pull that back, weren't they? Like some of the buffer for home loans, and then I think they increase the deposit required as well, or the loan to value ratio maybe?
Yeah, they did a few things, a few macroprudential measures. Yeah, but it hasn't worked. Like, prices keep accelerating. So
right. What now then? What do they do? Just hike interest rates.
Yeah, I think that's the end of it. Yeah.
Is that the only sort of tool left in the belt? They go.
I mean, there's probably other macroprudential measures they could invent. You know, let's just make it up. This is a credit rationing, like to anyone with the last name J to Z can't get a mortgage this month, or something like that. You could do whatever you want. It would be unconventional, well, but
I mean, money printing is one thing. I think we're all getting used to that idea. I don't know that the credit rationing, that seems a little bit crazy even for these times that we're living in.
But at the end of the day, so it's just worth remembering that the economy is a construct, and all the rules of the economy are just have been made up at some point. Even something as fundamental as property rights, that you own something and that you can go to law enforcement and get them to enforce your ownership of a thing, that's just something we decided That's just a social construct. There's no sort of natural law in it.
Like at a primitive level, you mean?
Yeah.
As if the government disappeared. And this is, isn't this the whole thing with crypto and NFTs and decentralized finance and all that stuff where you're sort of saying you need some, there's no central authority to enforce the ownership of things.
Yeah.
Which is what makes crypto so different.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of my criticisms of like the full libertarian dream of Bitcoin as it's been expressed where I've seen it, is it's like you're talking about taking money away from the governments, but that's sort of, if you're defunding government, then you're defunding the police and the army and the military, but those are institutions that enforce property rights. So then in that scenario, it's just whoever's got the biggest guns ends up with all the property. That's this.
You're living in the past already. You're living in the past. We're all living in the metaverse now. So you can have all your physical property. You can do what you want with it. You can farm it, whatever. I don't care. I'm in the metaverse with a sick avatar and living in a virtual mansion. So do what you want with your property. I'm not there anymore. Okay. Right, Thomas, there's been a lot of talk about this in the last few weeks. They're calling it the Great Resignation. I have also heard it called the Big Quit. And that sounds like an anti-smoking campaign. So we'll go with the Great Resignation. So what's going on with the Great Resignation?
Yes, this came out of US data and then people are talking about it happening here in Australia and all over the world, really. They're talking about this as being one of the phenomenons to come out of COVID. Yeah, so, but the quit rate, there's a piece of data called the quit rate, which is the share of workers who voluntarily leave their jobs. In America, we get that piece of data, and that hit a new record of 3% in September 2021, the highest level on record. And yeah, so people talking about it being the great resignation, that it's happening. And so one of the things is that partly that's concentrated in older workers, so there does seem that there's some older workers who are retiring and exiting the labor force.
Hardly news, is it? Like that old people are retiring and not working anymore?
Well, more that they were retiring earlier than you'd expect, possibly.
Right.
Is the story there. That they took their opportunity and went, that's it, I'm out. But I mean, they're
sitting on fat stacks of cash. Like everyone's been locked up and getting, you know, we've talked before about everyone's savings rates and everyone's sitting on more savings than ever. So they probably just brought it forward a bit.
Probably right. But yeah.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, no, you write a letter to RBA, tell them what you reckon.
That'd be good. Oh, well, Phil's coming over for dinner, actually.
Yeah. Microsoft did some research where they reckon that 40% of the global workforce are considering leaving their employers this year, they reckon, which would be pretty massive.
To do what?
Invest in crypto, maybe.
See, I heard that they were leaving. I heard that same stat, 40%, but they were just resigning to go and work somewhere else.
I think there is a lot of that. Yeah.
Which then, to call it the Great Resignation is putting a pretty negative spin on it, isn't it? Like it's like the great everyone's getting a new job.
Yeah, that's true. Well, one, we don't know, because we don't know for sure whether people are planning to return. And some people, like Deutsche Bank's strategist Robin Winkler, said that after a pandemic, you get this pattern where people's preference shifts from consumption to leisure, that everyone's dying and it sort of makes you question what's important in life. And you say, working's not important. Working's not what I want to be doing. I want to be living my life, starting my bespoke craft brewery or whatever it is, and you go out and live more. And he's saying, he had a stat saying that after the Black Death in the 14th century, the Black Plague, real wages rose because there was a massive labor shortage because everyone was dead, but average hours worked dropped, so people worked less. And saying it was a kind of a preference for more work-life balance among the peasantry.
Work-life balance in the 14th century. Yeah, I'm just spending too much time on the loom at my weaving gig. I've really got to get home and play catch the rock with my kids. How reliable is that data?
Oh, yeah, I don't sketchy. Know. There's economic history. This is an interesting field of sort of forensic creativity.
Yeah. It was probably a junior as well that put it together, because all the like senior management would have all died in the plague. They would have been out schmoozing at lunches and at banquets, as it was at the time. And would have all got the plague. It would have just been some junior stuck at home somewhere. Would have been safe. And then they're like, so what happened? What was the economic fallout from the plague? He's like, oh, I don't know. I guess people stopped working as much. Dad was home a bit more.
Yeah, the other stat that I saw is a survey saying that 4% of Americans have reportedly quit their jobs because they've got enough money to, thanks to crypto investments.
Wow, 4%?
Mm.
So we're talking it was higher that 3% were quitting to go to just go do something else. That was the big quit number.
Yeah.
And 4% are quitting because they've got a Lamborghini in the garage because they bought some Solana back in 2020. That seems high. Again, I'm probably going to question your question the reliability of the data.
Yeah, no, you do need to question the reliability of some of this data, to be sure. Yeah,
because I did read a couple of articles today. Actually, they were talking about how, you know, it might not necessarily, like, quitting's not necessarily the best thing, right? Like, it might just be a good time to go and talk to your boss, and go like, hey, you know, like, don't go in there and ask for 25%. It's ridiculous. But, you know, like, maybe just go and have a conversation, because maybe your current job isn't, like, terrible and there are things you could do. Like, it's just a good time to have that conversation. I think everyone's reassessing a little bit. Like, I can, I don't know. I think people do that anyway, don't they? I'm constantly reassessing and reevaluating. Like, I've never had a job where I've just gone, well, this is it. I'm good now.
Well, yeah. Finished. Yeah, but you're a bit old. Like, I saw a stat the other day saying that if you're a millennial, like, if you're under 40, you've never had a pay rise, because there just hasn't been that sort of culture of just general pay increases. That's sort of, that was an old world thing. Like, with the labor market over the past 20 years hasn't delivered real wage gains.
Right.
And so...
What do you mean? So people, the younger generation haven't, they're not on an award? they're not part of enterprise bargaining?
Oh, I think, yeah, less and less so. But also the idea that you could go in and negotiate a pay rise, or just go to your boss and say, hey, I think I need a pay rise. That's just not a thing. And the study was saying that millennials don't even realize that that's a thing. And part of what happens when you have slack in the labor market, you know, which we haven't now, because largely because we haven't had immigration, so that sort of created a lot of tightness in the labour market. But when you've got slack in the labour market, then, you know, when you're fearful of your jobs, you're not going out there and asking for wage rises. And that's sort of what shifted with the pandemic, is that there's tightness in the labour market, and people are seeing that there is tightness, and it's starting to get competitive. The other thing is, like, that you've had huge government spending, so $5 trillion in the US, it buys people time. And they're a bit like, well, I've got a buffer now. Unemployment benefits are up. There's money coming in. I can actually just take stock. I don't have to just jump out and take the best job, the first job I find, or I don't have to stick with a job that's not really working for me. I can take a step back, have a breath, and then find a job that really works for me. Which I think is a different story to, like, the big quit. It's more like just saying, like, okay, this is a seller's market, labor seller's market. I'm going to be a bit choosy about who I sell my labor to.
Yeah.
Because the first time in a generation, you've got that luxury.
Yeah, or you can at least have the conversation too. You know, that must be pretty liberating. Like, imagine finding that out if you're like 25 and you didn't realize that was even a thing. Like, yeah. What? I could just go on, like, tomorrow and say, look, thinking I might be worth a bit more than I'm on, do you reckon you could sling me a couple of extra bucks? And, yeah, knowing that you've kind of got them over a barrel.
Yeah, yeah. I would encourage
everyone to do it.
There's a great story about a McDonald's in the US who collectively decided. This is the other thing we're seeing, is a rise in collective action. But the McDonald's manager got all his staff together and said, I think we need more money. I think we deserve more money. There's not, you know, it's a tight labor market. We're not filling jobs. Why don't we all push for more money? And everyone went, yeah, all right, well, let's go on a day strike. And they sent the message to the manager of the thing. And they quoted him saying, like, yeah, so I sent my manager a fax, and it was the scariest thing I'd ever done. And I was like, a fax?
No wonder. Those machines make some pretty weird noises. All right, let's pause there. We'll grab a quick word from our sponsors and be back with more Comedian versus Economist right after this.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back here on Comedian versus Economist. Don't forget, we love hearing from you. You can send us an email, cve@equitymates.com, or via the website equitymates.com/CVE, or why not check us out on Instagram and Facebook at CVE Podcast. Now, Thomas, the ASX apparently has $200 billion of companies that do not make a profit. How can this be?
Yeah, so this is some research that comes from MST Marquee Research. They put together an index of sorts in the ASX 300 looking at the number of companies that are currently not delivering a profit. Yeah, and there's 48 of those in the 300 aren't making any money. And they're
48?
48, yeah. 48 of 300. It's quite a lot, yeah. It's never zero, though. Like, the sort of, if you look at the chart, I'll share it, maybe I'll share it to Instagram, but it's normally about 30%, or no, about 35. So it's sort of 35, you know, because it's not, you know, year to year, you have a bad year, companies don't make some money or something.
Yeah.
Bad year. So 35 seems to be about the long run average. It got up to 70 during the GFC, so 70 out of 300.
Right. And so to take a step backwards, the ASX 300, that's the 300 biggest companies by market cap, right?
Mm,
so that's how much those companies are worth.
Yeah.
Okay. Just in case anyone wasn't familiar with the ASX 300 term. So, and so of those 300 companies, you're saying 48 of them are not profitable.
Yeah.
And they're worth a collective $200 billion.
Yeah. So you remember, like, so the share price is a snapshot of the future. It's what the market collectively believes the future looks like. So they might not be profitable now, but they're banking that in the short to medium term, they are going to become profitable. That sort of.
So they're speckies.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if you call them all speckies, but yeah, some aren't making a profit.
They might soon. That they might soon.
Yeah.
Not speckies. We're just speculating that they might do well soon.
Yeah. So there was a sort of I think a chart to Instagram a few earlier in the year. Goldman Sachs did a similar thing for the US market, and that was also like bursting through record highs as well. And sort of the idea that, like, MST Marquee Research is pushing as well, saying it's a consequence of central banks and their cavalier attitudes to fueling speculative bubbles.
Right.
I think that's exactly their agenda, but that's sort of saying, like, it's all this money printing creates super cheap money, which creates a bit of a speculative bubble in things, and people are willing to back horses that aren't making any money.
Right. So some of these are on the way up and some of them are on the way down. Is that fair to say, at least? Like, some of them did make money.
Yeah, I mean, they might have just had a bad year. I did see some criticism of the Goldman Sachs measure, saying it was because it's on GAAP accounting measures, generally accepted accounting principles, and saying that that's not a really great measure for looking at profitability. It's a bit of a muddy measure to look through, and there are other measures you should look at. But regardless of how a series is constructed and how accurate it is, what's interesting is if it's consistently constructed. And then the way it moves is interesting. And it has risen substantially since the GFC. Sorry, since COVID hit. So it's down around sort of 15 companies when COVID hit. and it's now up to 48. So things are shifting substantially on that front. Yeah, so it is interesting. So the question is it a speculative story? Is it that? I mean, I think if it was startups, you often hear this about, you know, people backing startups that aren't making any money and how crazy that can be. And like during the dot-com boom, you had companies that had never made profit, had never even made revenue in some cases, getting sort of eye-watering valuations. And then that was a sign of a speculative bubble because people are willing to pay lots of money for shares in a company that had no track record whatsoever. But I think when you're talking about the ASX 300, you're talking about some pretty big companies. So I don't think we're not talking about speculative startups here. We're talking about companies that, you know, have got big enough to be in the ASX 300. That's a reasonable benchmark. And they're just not happening to be profitable at the moment. So it might say more about current market conditions than it says about the speculative bubble that we may or may not be in.
So is it interesting though? Not that I haven't found everything you've just said very interesting. Is it interesting though that it's higher now? Like, so it was 15 earlier. It's now 30. It's 48. That's the trend to keep an eye on. Like, if that keeps going up, is that interesting?
To you? Yeah, no, it is interesting. But to understand what it's telling you though. That you need you need a bit more nuance in that picture. You need to sort of know why these companies aren't making money. Like, are they good companies that have just fallen on a bit of rough times because of COVID and they're going to bounce back? You know, maybe it's like Flight Center or Qantas or something. Good companies, rough times because of COVID, not making any money, but should make money once the economy opens up again. Are they companies like that, or are they companies that people are just taking a massive punt on the future, like a Tesla or a Rivian or something, where it's like based on a view of what the market may or may not look like in 5 to 10 years, and people are just taking a punt because there's all this cheap money in the system.
Yeah, right. So to use that, like, so Qantas would be one that's a good example to sort of focus on. So they would have made, they did make losses for a long time during COVID, right? The planes are grounded. Mm-hmm. But you wouldn't say that Qantas is a bad company. So
No. And
I guess this is different from the valuation of the company as well. So this is not a measure of the valuation. Like Qantas is still valued at however many billions of dollars it's valued at. Mm-hmm. And so this is just a fact. It's just like 48 companies didn't make any money for a little while. Like
Yeah, potentially.
Doesn't really say much more to me than that.
No, I tend to agree. I think they're drawing a little bit of a long bow to say that this is points to the speculative nature of the market. Yeah. Mm. So their analyst says central bankers are now sowing the seeds of horrendous value destruction in the future. However, they appear to be oblivious to this. I just don't think that. I think that's just way.
I don't know that buying Qantas coming out of a pandemic is a speculative.
No.
Speculative play.
No, that's right. That's right.
I heard a guy the other day on another podcast I listened to saying that Qantas was one of the best buys. We'll be talking now about Qantas in like 20 years as like you wish you'd bought Qantas at the, you know, where it is now.
Yeah.
Not financial advice at all. And obviously no one's taking it from me anyway, but that's what I hear. That's why. That's the good oil. That's my mail.
That's the goss from your mate.
From my mate. Runs a podcast no one's ever heard of, even less popular than ours. All right, Thomas, we're going to tackle the big question here on CVE. Why houses are not like mandarins? Jared sent us an email, cve@equitymates.com, and Jared sent us a link to an article, I think it was in the ABC News, with a couple of people, a Liberal MP and an assistant governor of the RBA, arguing about why houses are not like mandarins. Thomas, talk me through it. What happened?
Yeah, so I don't know if it's still running. I think it might have finished now. The federal government was running a housing inquiry or housing affordability inquiry. I think it was chaired by the Liberal MP, Jason Falinski. And he was pushing the line. He said that basically he was saying it's about supply. And surely if we have more supply, then we get cheaper prices. And he's saying, let me give you this analogy. I went and bought fruit on the weekend and I paid about 75 cents per mandarin. And I don't know if it was a good deal or not, but when I got to the counter, I still had money left over. I didn't increase how much I spent for the mandarin just because I could afford to pay more. But I might have done that if there weren't enough mandarins in the store. He wasn't actually talking to Ellis at this point. He was talking to the guys at ASICS and they were like, oh, we don't even know what you're talking about.
Was he smoking a joint at the time? Was he?
It's a little hard to follow his logic there, I'll admit.
Right.
Yeah, he's saying basically, isn't it about supply? And this is sort of classic federal at the federal level. So housing affordability is this can that gets kicked around. And typically the federal government, both the Liberal and the ALP, push the idea that you need more housing supply and you need to cut red tape and let developers have more run to bring more housing supply online. Because when you bring some more supply online, that reduces prices. There's two reasons why they do that. One is that they're both in the pocket of the developers. So they're getting funding from developers. So they want to, that speaks to that interest of that base. But two, if it's a supply side problem, then it pushes it back on the states and the local governments, because the states and local governments have control of planning. And so if you think the problem's supply and freeing up land and bringing houses to market, that's good for a federal government because you don't have to do anything about that. You just puts it all on the states and the local governments. So you just handball that over to the states then and wash your hands of it. So that's why you often get from in these housing inquiries, and there's been like a dozen over the past 20 years, all come to sort of nothing. It's becoming a little bit of a joke. That's why nothing ever comes of it, because the federal government wants to push it back on the states, and the states want to say it's about sort of the federal settings like interest rates and the tax settings. But so there's a bit of an argument about who's got responsibility for housing affordability, and in the end, no one really takes responsibility for it.
Right.
So, yeah, so anyway, Filinski's pushing the line that it's about supply, and then Lucy Ellis is saying that it's not really about supply, and saying at some level, high house prices, that was our doing. Financial deregulation in the 1980s and a global decline in inflation in the 90s combined to reduce normal interest rates, and that's what pushed up house prices. Houses are not mandarins. The land underneath them is very important. You don't buy mandarins with a 25-year mortgage. Accumulated interest is not a consideration when you're buying mandarins. And the mandarins you buy this week are new mandarins, and they're not the mandarins that you didn't buy last week.
Geez, they're really labouring that analogy, aren't they?
Yeah, went to town with it a bit.
Sorry, you're going to say why that was important?
Well, it's important because you're talking about the stock. And so there's 9 million homes in Australia. Each year we build about 100,000 new homes. So that's about 1%. So we increase the housing stock by about 1% each year. If you increase that by 50% to 150,000, say, then you're increasing it by 1.5%, which isn't all that much different. It's not enough to move the market price. Does that make sense? So even if you just threw a whole lot of supply at the market, it's not going to bring down the total stock, because the total stock is just so huge.
Yeah, and I kind of get it too, because in the mandarin analogy, like, have you ever tried selling a used mandarin? Like, you can't get anything for them. I had a mandarin for lunch today and I took it down the road and I said, would anyone like the rest of my mandarin? Just crickets. No one. No one was interested at all. So, I can see why this. I'm not even sure why it's kind of a debate.
Yeah.
No, but like she was saying, like there'll be new mandarins next week, and there'll be new houses next week. But the difference is that the old mandarins are gone. Like they've disappeared. You know. And so where the houses don't go anywhere, the houses are here forever.
Yeah, that's right.
And they go into the system and they get passed around, and it's. Blind Freddy could see that they're not like mandarins.
Mm, mm.
You can eat them.
Yeah. I mean, I think at some level it must be true. Like, there's 9 million homes in Australia. If I added supply of 10 million homes tomorrow, that would shift the price of homes.
Yeah.
There is some level where it matters. But at the current level of the stock and the current level of the flow of the new houses coming in, it's not enough to, you know, tinkering with that is not going to make a difference to house prices. What monsters house prices, what really moves house prices is interest rates and the credit market. And that's what Lucy Ellis's point is.
Right. So you're on Lucy's side?
Yeah, I'm definitely taking Lucy's side on that one. Yeah.
All right. I did some research. I didn't want to come in all, you know, houses are not like mandarins. I thought I didn't want to be just living in the echo chamber. So I went and tried to find the contrarian view, and I found some information about why houses maybe are like mandarins. One was because they're often orange. So you've seen a lot of orange, seen a lot of orange brick houses around. Makes them quite mandarin in appearance. Some of them have pips inside, especially if you go to Philippa's house. She's got at least one pip in there. But I found an article from March that was talking about how mandarin prices are going to go up 30% this year due to labour shortages, which is about the same time the housing market took off at about the same rate. So
yeah, well, there you go.
I think maybe Jason, was his name Jason?
Yeah, Jason.
Maybe he's got a point. I think he's slightly off the target, but I can help him out if he needs some points for his debate with Lucy. Give us a shout out, Jason, at CVE Podcast on Instagram and Facebook, yeah. Or send us an email, CVE@equitymates.com, or on the website, equitymates.com/CVE. All right, on that note, why don't we leave it there for this week? Thomas, thank you for your company. Don't forget, lots of great shows from Equity Mates Media. Get Started Investing, Equity Mates Investing Podcast, You're in Good Company, Talk Money to Me, and the new Crypto Curious. Get your ears around all of them. Thank you very much for joining us this week. Very special episode next week because it'll be our last for the year. It'll be the last before we go on Christmas holidays. Thomas and I got some family stuff to take care of. Namely Christmas Day, getting through that. Join us next week. It'll be the final show of the year. We did want to do an Ask Us Anything because apparently that's what podcasts do. And now that we're a year old, we thought it'd be a good time to do it. Weren't confident, to be honest, that we'd have enough questions for a whole episode. So we thought we'd just throw the invitation out there. Ask us anything you like at all. I've given you the email address several times, cve@equitymates.com. Anything you like. I think we're going to do a bit of a retrospective, maybe a bit of, dare I say, Thomas, a bit of forecasting for next year, which we can review next year and realise how wrong it was and talk about how difficult forecasting is again. Thank you once again for tuning in. We do really appreciate it. We hope you'll join us for the final episode of the year next week. Until then, it's goodbye from us. Cheers.
Comedian vs. Economist is a product of Equity Mates Media. All information in this podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only. It is not intended as a substitute for professional finance, legal, or tax advice. The hosts of Comedian vs. Economist are not financial professionals and are not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Before making any financial decisions, you should read the product disclosure statement and, if necessary, consult a licensed financial professional. Do not take financial advice from a podcast. For more information, head to the disclaimer page on the Equity Mates website where you can find ASIC resources and find a registered financial professional near you. In the spirit of reconciliation, Equity Mates Media and the hosts of Comedian vs. Economist acknowledge the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea and community. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people today.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.